transfer station at Navern had none of the luxury and elegance of Rockhouse Major. It was as large, it had to be, to handle the transfers of entire troop ships, but only in the exchange did any civilians color and brighten the drab corridors and docksides. The Better Luck had come in, with its new identity unchallenged. Just another scruffy little tramp freighter and her slipshod crew. Harris eyed the material she'd been given.
Recognition's supposed to be easy. The prince has seen me, I've seen him.
But the double. You might mistake the double for the prince.
The double doesn't know me. He won't approach. It's true both of them will be there, but only one will come aboard.
Like all but the restricted stations, Navern Station had no objection to civilian traffic, in moderation, and civilians could shop at the exchange, paying higher prices. Harris was claiming a subcontract with Outworld Parcel, one of the independent companies transferring small hard copy documents and packages for individuals who preferred not to use the government mail service. The Crown had provided such documents and arranged for her to dump any business received at a nearby Outworld Parcel main depot. Harris checked in at the Outworld Parcel local office, handing the clerk the little strip of platinum-embossed plastic. The clerk glanced at her as he fed the strip into the reader.
You're new on this run, aren't you? What happened to Sal?
No idea. I don't ask questions. They shift me around wherever there's a gap.
Oh, maybe that port drive pod finally went sour and he's in refitting.
The clerk touched a keypad and a sign lighted up. Outgoing active.
How long are you here for? There's only a few letters now, but if you'll be here long enough for a shuttle from below, I can guarantee at least a 50-kilo cargo.
How long's that?
Let me check our downside office.
The clerk vanished into a back room. A few minutes later, he came out.
You're in luck. They can add the downside accumulation to the next shuttle, and that's tomorrow. It'll be up here by 1800, but it won't unload until 2000 at least.
I suppose. They didn't say I'd have to wait. It was supposed to be a scoop and run.
Are you time-locked for your next destination?
No. Fine. We can wait. Let me know the mass and cubage when the shuttle lifts. You have the codes.
He would return the identification strip when she signed for the outgoing mail. The exchange was next door. Harris glanced in at rows of displayed merchandise. Once, such places had been her territory. She had paid the lower military price. She had felt at home. Now, she made herself enter, with a quick smile at the security guard by the door.
New on station?
Right. The Better Luck. We have a subcontract with Outworld Parcel.
About time. I'm expecting a package from my parents.
Sorry. I was sent on pickup. We didn't bring anything.
Damn it. It's been twice as long as government mail, and it's supposed to be quicker.
The guy at the office said maybe Sal had a drive out and had to go to refitting. We weren't told, but if that's true, another ship will be bringing that load.
Harris hoped Sal himself wouldn't show up in the next day or so.
Well, enjoy yourself. Shop your little heart out.
Harris wandered around, picking up an entertainment cube and a box of sweets, for which he paid an outrageous price. Having heard this complaint often from civilians while she was still in the fleet, she shook her head at the guard on her way out.
Damn it, the prices go up every trip. You expect us to maintain you in luxury while hard-working taxpayers go short.
The guard gave her the same bored look she had given others, and she almost giggled. When the shuttle arrived, Navern Station took on a spurious gaiety. Harris cast a critical eye on the young officers, and almost immediately thought better of Ronnie and George at their worst. The Royal Aerospace Service, known to those in the regular space service as the Royal Ass, attracted the wealthy and highborn into its officer corps. The young officers sported a foppish uniform with an abundance of braid and shiny metal, sky-blue tunics with cream facings over dark blue trousers, cream and scarlet piping on every seam, tall, shiny boots. No wonder they seemed as businesslike and military as a gaggle of debutantes. Most of them quickly shed their colorful uniforms for even more outlandish and expensive civilian clothes. Whatever sense they might have shown at their duties on planet, they shed as quickly, and Harris saw little sign of supervision or discipline. She was glad she had no responsibility for them. Navern stationers wouldn't put themselves out for a small tramp freighter, which could be assumed to have no spending power, but 50 familiar Royal Junior officers were another matter. Harris could hardly believe it was the same service area she'd seen before. Suddenly, there were dozens of attractive young men and women, far more than one per officer, she suspected, strolling the corridors, bait for even more colorful fish. A door that had presented only a blank gray metal face before now opened on a cozy bar with a live band playing in one corner. The smell of real food wafted out another door that Harris hadn't seen. Two sleek, dripping, naked figures chased each other out a door just in front of her. That argued for the existence of a swimming pool.
But where is the prince?
He should have had a message. They had sent one in the code given them, and he was supposed to make the contact. She would have no excuse to hang about once she'd collected the Outworld parcels cargo. She needed to find him, or have him find her, now. She strolled back toward the OP office to check the status of the cargo. The clerk was harried. A line of impatient young officers had hand-carried mail and packages to check through.
Oh, another shift at least, even with no more problems. Tarash is out with something she ate, and Jivvy sprained an ankle, but the clinic is packed. It always is with this bunch.
Fine. Let me know.
Back aboard Better Luck, she checked on the progress of the cockroach egg hunt. They had cleared the bridge and the galleys and were working on the owner's quarters. If the prince found cockroaches aboard, Harris knew the news would spread. She took a look at what had been an elegant guest suite in which the prince had traveled from Cerealis. Bare decking and bulkheads, just as in crew quarters, with the bed platform's framing all too visible. Oblo had installed a bare-bones communications node, nothing like the handsome system Cecilia had had, with its touch screens and voice response. Plenty of bedding, though, and towels, and those colorful pillows. Worst, though, the suite still held a faint odor of cockroach. Harris realized she was wrinkling her nose. That would never do. She'd send someone to buy an olfactory screen. Gradually, Cecilia began to regain a sense of structure in her existence. Brunn and the other attendants spoke to her often, telling her what time it was, what watch, who was in the room, what they had done, and were about to do. She could not see the light level change or the colors they described on the walls, but she could imagine it all. She began to know, when she woke, what shift to expect, who would be in the room. So she knew it was morning. Ship's morning, early in the main day shift, when the doctors both arrived to explain her situation as they then understood it.
Lady Cecilia, I'm now sure that you're able to hear, and I hope understand what we're saying. I'm going to explain what tests we've done and what more we can do aboard the yacht and what we'll be trying to do later. You may know more about what happened to you than we do, although we're ready to make an educated guess. The drugs we found in the Venus Access reservoirs consisted of a perfectly ordinary array of cardiac drugs, which would have been dispensed automatically at signals from the cardiac monitor, and some very unusual neuroactive drugs, one of them not in the databanks at all. I suspect that these drugs were merely for maintenance, not the ones that caused the initial damage. We can't tell yet how much function will return just because you no longer have the maintenance drugs in your system, or how long it'll take. It depends on how the damage was done, and whether the maintenance drugs were considered essential or just a safeguard against spontaneous recovery. I can tell you that the maintenance drugs targeted voluntary muscle innervation, motor and sensory both. Thus, I expect you to regain some sensation of touch and some ability to move. How much is impossible to say. It is unusual for someone with your level of deficit to be able to breathe spontaneously. They did a fine job of sparing respiratory function. It's amazing that you can hear. And yet, the few medical records we were able to get indicate that you couldn't, that your auditory cortex was inactive in the presence of both speech and sound. Either someone fiddled with the scans, or I can't imagine what.
Cecilia struggled to remember the early days, what everyone had said. She knew the lawyer had been told she could not hear. She had heard that. She remembered hearing about the scans that were supposed to prove it. That suggested intentional deception. but she had no way to let Dr. Cherda know what she had heard. Over the next few days, sensation returned slowly in odd patches. One time, Cecilia woke, she felt the side of her face as if it were a patch of harsh cloth laid on her skull. She felt the slight pressure of air against it from the ventilator. The nurse's gentle face washing felt like being scrubbed with a broom. Still, she could not move, could not flinch away. Later that day, she had an uncanny sensation in her left arm, as if something were crawling down it from shoulder to elbow, and from there along the outside of her forearm to her little finger. The feeling grew to a tingle, then an itch, then a painful throbbing that subsided gradually over far too long a time. Each time Cherda came in, she touched Cecilia everywhere, explaining the process over and over. The monitors they had, crude as they were compared to those in a major neuro ward, showed Cecilia's response, and Cherda was mapping the return of sensation. The nurses and Brunn massaged her too, and gradually, fitfully, she remapped the feeling of her own body. Blank patches remained. Her left upper chest had no sensation. That was where the implant ports were. They'd probably destroyed the innervation there. That was standard practice. She felt nothing on the insides of both arms, where the median nerve should have supplied sensation and controlled movement. One foot regained sensation in a maddening pins and needles form days before the other. Her nose itched. The first movement, the first real movement, came when the nurse's washcloth dripped cold on her shoulder. She flinched and knew she moved. She tried again. The nurse ran for a doctor and returned with Dr. Cherda.
Again.
Cecilia twitched again, as proud as if she'd just taken a big drop jump.
That's excellent. Now try the other one.
Cecilia tried, but couldn't remember how to move that shoulder. Someone tickled her just above the collarbone.
Ah, yes.
She struggled again and felt her skin move against the sheet.
Not as strong, but something. Good progress. Keep doing that.
She kept doing that, but it didn't seem to lead anywhere. She tried to imagine what it looked like, the twitch of a shoulder. Not as communicative as a facial expression. And no matter how she struggled, she couldn't move her hands. Surely she would have to move her hands to use sign language. Then, 3 days later, when Cherda had pulled her lower jaw down, she snapped it closed so hard her teeth hurt. She couldn't open it, but she could close it when Cherda opened it again.
Yes, a good response. Now we start your communication training. I know you're an intelligent adult, and I know there's lots you want to say, but we'll start with what we need to know first. We want you to have a yes and a no. Right now, your shoulder jerk is your strongest motion. Let's try one jerk for yes and two for no. Understand?
Cecilia twitched her shoulder with contemptuous ease.
I could have done that 3 days ago. Why didn't they tell me? Why didn't I think of it?
Good. Now, did you like your breakfast?
Breakfast had been a bland flavor of custard. She had never liked bland anything.
Excellent. You may not realize it, but you've just demonstrated that your higher language functions are still intact. You understood both directions and a question form. Did you like lunch?
Lunch had been the date caramel almond custard, her favorite of the flavors she'd had.
Now I've got to ask you a lot of boring questions that are standard on neuropsych exams. And I'm going to record this on full video because it may be used in court to establish your competency.
Cecilia hadn't thought of that. Could someone who only twitched one shoulder be considered competent legally? She had thought she couldn't fight that battle until she was well.
Is your name Cecilia DeMarctos? Do you know where you are?
Now that was a hopeless question. Cecilia knew she was on a yacht, but she had no idea where the yacht was. She shrugged both shoulders, the right more strongly. Apparently, that got through.
Bad question. Are you in a hospital? Are you in a spacecraft? Are you aware of the nature of your disability? Was this disability the result of natural causes?
No one was going to believe this, Cecilia thought. It might convince Chirta or Bunny, but she couldn't see it working in court. Chirta proceeded to questions of reasoning and general knowledge, most of them ridiculously easy.
Is a circle a geometric solid?
No, of course not.
Is a horse a mammal?
Yes, dummy.
Did you name Harris Serrano a beneficiary in your will?
Yes.
Did Harris Serrano unduly influence you to make her a beneficiary in your will?
No!
Cecilia made those twitches as big as she could, and then a muscle in her back cramped. Chirta stopped the questions and patiently massaged the cramp out.
I wish we could give you muscle relaxants, but I don't want to risk any more dissociation between your nerves and your muscles. Things are bad enough.
Cecilia wondered what that meant. She had thought things were going well. If she could move a shoulder now, if she could answer questions... She pushed aside her own doubts and refused to pay attention to the doctor's. Whatever the medical agenda, her own would include figuring out a way to ask for specific foods, things with more flavor and more texture. Now, with even that meager amount of communication, the days moved more swiftly. Would she like to try something with more texture?
Yes!
And a mouthful of something soft but grainy, still too bland, challenged her ability to move her tongue and swallow it. Would she like music?
Yes!
This music?
No.
Trial and error, more error than success at first, remapped her choices in flavors and music. As she had feared, the dietitian could not be persuaded to offer really tasty food, and there was no way to say, "More garlic, you idiot," with a twitch of the shoulder. She learned to move her knees one by one, and wished someone would think of using the twitch of her other shoulder and both knees for other useful signals, but no one did. Yet. In her mind, she fashioned her own code. More, less, not yet, hurry up, enough, go away, question. The question signal would have been really helpful. She had more to ask them, she thought, than they had to ask her. But she realized, from their talk, that they were fully engaged already in discovering what had been done to her, and what might be done about it. For the urgency they conveyed, she could forgive a lot.